All right, good morning, golfers. Welcome to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. Thank you for joining me on this beautiful Saturday, July 30th, 2016, moving day at the PGA, Baltusrol Golf Club for the 2016 PGA Championship. Quite a day yesterday. Got through the weather, which was a good thing, and then made it through and finished on time. So it looks like, at least at this point, the weather should hold up and we'll be all right to finish on time on Sunday. Let's just hope. Not sure that's going to stay that way, but at this point, if it does, that would be fantastic. Nobody likes a Monday finish. So looking forward to today's show. Hopefully, Jeff Babineaux from Golf Week will be joining me shortly. Just waiting for him. And it should be insightful talk. He's always great to talk to. We've talked to him before. Some exciting stuff going on at the PGA, so be looking forward to breaking that down with him. But we're going to take a short break. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.
The Long Island Golf Association is a nonprofit organization of 81 private and public clubs. The LIGA conducts 15 championships annually and works closely with the Long Island Caddy Scholarship Fund. The scholarships are granted to young men and women who are employed at member clubs. For more information on how you can participate in a championship, or if you'd like to donate your time as a volunteer, please call the LIGA at 516-746-1015. That's 516-746-1015. 1015, or visit us at www.longislandgolf.org. Is your inspection due? Are you tired of listening to that noise your car is making? If you're looking for a reliable shop to service your car, try A1 Action Auto for all your car service needs. A1 Auto is a New York State certified shop, and owner Ed Terabile has over 25 years of experience. A1 Action Auto is conveniently located off Sunrise Highway in West Islip, so pick up the phone and call A1 Action Auto at 631-321-4242. That's 631-321-4242.
All right, welcome back to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. Thought we got a second here, so let's just go through the leaderboard just a little bit. Two people tied for first, Jimmy Walker and Robert Streb. Obviously, Robert Streb, member of the 63 Club yesterday. He's at minus. They're both at minus -9, and another historic round. Seems like they're coming in bunches now. Emiliano Grillo at -7 with Jason Day, who had quite the back nine yesterday. And pleased to be joined by Jeff Babineaux, senior writer at Golf Week. How you doing, Jeff?
I'm doing good. How you doing?
Doing fantastic. Made it through the weather yesterday. It was a little dicey in the morning, but we got through it and got all the golf in, and we shaped up for a pretty good weekend, don't you think?
Oh, I think it's going to be a great weekend. Yeah, it's exciting out there. It's got some good names in the hunt. You know, Glory's last shot here, as they used to call it, and yeah. It should be a good one.
Yesterday was quite the day. I think yesterday really shaped up the weekend. There was so many things going on, whether it was Rory McIlroy's putting, whether it was the nonsense with the drop of with Jordan Spieth. You had Robert Streb, another historical round, and Jason Day lighting up the back nine. It was sort of a emotionally, it was such a, and don't forget Rory McIlroy's putting. It was such a, if you're paying attention to the storylines, it had something for everybody, don't you think?
Well, you know, we come to these things to write. You know, we're writing daily for golfweek.com. We had a team of probably, I guess we had six guys here, and there's no shortage. We don't look around wondering what to write. It's just constant. You know, as the day goes, it's unbelievable, and it's great. You know, the Baltusrol is a little mystifying to me. You know, on Thursday it started out kind of easy, and the PGA of America lets these guys play. You know, I think that's a signature. I think a lot of people enjoy that. So they're not afraid to let guys go out there and make birdies. And it kind of went out early Thursday. Guys are making a lot of birdies. You're like, well, this might be kind of easy on these guys. Then it kind of shifted a little and picked up in the afternoon. It kind of felt a little like the U.S. Open. And then yesterday in the morning, it was so wet, you thought they would tear it up, and it took a while. And he had some good scores late, but it still played long and tough. So it's a really good test. And, there's a lot of guys fighting to get in there and make something happen.
you've covered a number of championships, major championships, far more than me. Have you ever heard of a situation in which players have gotten the wrong pin sheet?
Yeah, that I'm sure it's happened. It was unfortunate. I guess the hole had moved, and it did affect play. I mean, it affected Colton Oates. He ended up making the cut, I think, on the number, but it could have cost him. And it was unfortunate. You know, this is a good group. Kerry Haig has been doing this for nearly three decades, running this tournament, setting it up, and a long time anyway. And he's pretty buttoned up, and they really look at everything. And it was an oversight. It was unfortunate, and it did affect play. And, you know, I give him credit. He was there when those guys finished in the scoring hut to personally apologize. And it's all they could do at that point.
Yeah. I mean, it was just a strange one for me. I mean, I'm not, in this business as long as you, but it just, you know, I had never heard anything like that before. I know that Kerry does a great job. I know everybody loves him, and he does, you know, the PGA of America, I always think, is a fair test. And it was just, just the first one for me. I've never kind of heard that. So that's why I asked the question. I know they do a great job, but it was just a new one for me. And yes, I had heard he met them in the scorers at the scorers table to personally apologize, which I thought was a nice thing to do.
Right. Well, it's been kind of an odd summer. You know, we've seen a lot of firsts. We saw the the delayed penalty at the U.S. Open that we all weathered through, and it's something. I mean, this game doesn't short you on giving you stuff to think about and write about.
Yeah, that's for sure. It almost, on some levels, it writes itself. I thought your piece in Golf Week on the ruling was on the Spieth ruling. And for those who aren't aware, which I'd be hard pressed to find anybody who's not aware of what went on, it was a lengthy process of him taking basically a drop from some casual water on a path. And I thought your article was spot on in GolfWeek.com about how basically enough is enough, and can we just sort of simplify, and it makes me wonder what's more likely to happen, the USGA rolling the ball back or taking some sort of ownership and controlling that, or simplifying the rules. I don't know which one they are in need of more, but a simplification of the rules seems to be definitely at the top of the list.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, as complicated as the rules are, I think that's a simpler fix than rolling a ball back, because there's a lot of play there. And they don't want two different rules of golf. They don't want you and I playing one ball and Jason Day playing another. But as for the rules, it's just, they're too confusing. I mean, I got all kinds of reaction to that. People saying, well, the rules are there to benefit players, not hurt them. But, I mean, they're just so intricate and deep, and they have so many tentacles. I mean, I wrote in there that you have decimal points and letters and numbers and slashes. And, I mean, it's just way too, it's crazy. It's like a tax code. And I watched Spieth, and he was walked through every bit of that ruling with the official. I was standing right there, and he didn't do anything wrong. And all of a sudden, everyone saw his foot in a puddle and wanted to, you know, the armchair quarterback phone lines lit up. And I mean, what other game do we officiate from our couch? You know, some guy in Seattle, Washington, calling a play of what's happening in Baltusrol. So it's just kind of crazy and out of hand. I think people now are kind of looking for stuff. And I think the whole deal, with instant replay and slow motion, is inequitable, because, you know, if Tiger Woods is out there playing, you're going to see every shot he hits. And it might not be the case if it's Robert Streb. So how is that equitable? So it's just, I don't know, I guess I reached the boiling point and fired off on it yesterday, and I guess I felt a little bit better after filing that one.
Well, sometimes it can be a little cathartic, because, I think that I think a lot of people feel that way, and I think that's why it resonated, because, you know, I just, when you're watching, you know, remember when instant replay in football came in, and people worried about how long it was going to take. And there were times where it was really difficult to, 5-minute waits in between. It really does especially on a day like yesterday where there was so much going on, it sort of halts the momentum, not only of the players, but the telecast and the emotional ride that we kind of go on as a viewer.
Oh, yeah, it's slow, and it's just, you know, it's crazy. I mean, like, it was funny. I used it in the column. I mean, I was sitting there on a ruling with Zach Johnson a day earlier when somehow a twig became embedded in the green on the seventh hole. And so Aaron Yells had finished out, and I was standing on the fence next to him, and he goes, look, we're in a ballpark here that's 6 miles big, and we're talking about a half-inch twig. They had to bring in two officials to decide Zach Johnson could take this twig out of his line. That was like a mini tree sticking out of the green. And some of this stuff's just common sense. I mean, like, you almost want Jordan Spieth to ride down there yesterday, walk down there and take his ball out of a puddle and just place it a foot away, you know?
Right.
Instead of going through the whole process. It was a 10-minute process, easily, of dropping the ball. It's going into puddles. Now, he had other things in play. I mean, he was taking relief from casual water, but he also could take relief from the path.
Right.
If he so chose. But that was his best route for really hitting a shot. If he's going to take relief, he's going to put himself into a tree. So, it's just, you know, I don't know. It's just kind of nuts out there sometimes. And you and I plan on a weekend. It's supposed to be a fun game. You know, let's go chase it around, have some fun, and just not get too tangled up in all the red tape.
Yeah, no, I agree. But, you know, and the thing, too, though, is that it also, you have the complication of the rules, but then now you have the players who are paranoid because they don't want to do, I mean, he said it, Jordan said it after his round. He said, I asked every question I could possibly ask. So now they're sort of on the defensive, because they're now worried that they're making sure that they dot. So now even the simplest common sense rule, like a twig being embedded in the green, how now we have to have, you know, there has to be some sort of congressional committee because to make sure that everything is on the up and up. So now the players are on the defensive, and it makes it worse.
Yeah, and I mean, and honestly, these guys haven't made, because all they're going to do is say, look, I need an official here. And there's either a walking official or there's one station nearby in a hole, and they're right in there. And if I'm a golfer, I'm never doing anything without an official there. Why would you? You have this lifeline that's sitting right there,
right?
And that can walk you through it. So, you know, and that's a lot of times these guys get in trouble when they do stuff on their own, and it tells you how confusing the rules are when these guys are professionals who earn a paycheck week to week. And there's very few of them out there that are really rules experts. You know, I mean, Phil Mickelson is a rules expert. He can use the rules to his advantage because he knows them so well. And I remember years ago when Annika Sorenstam went to a USGA summit on rules to learn and take the test. And a lot more players should do that, because honestly, they really don't, because they know they have this security blanket 10 feet away and a rules official walking with them. But if these guys don't know I'm in and out, then it tells you something about maybe that rule book could get a little thinner.
Yeah, absolutely. And considering the money that they're playing for, why wouldn't you want an expert or, you know, someone to sign off, so to speak, on anything that you do out there?
Yeah, for sure.
For sure. All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in 30 seconds. We got Jeff Babineau from Golf Week magazine, golfweek.com. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.
Golf. Since 1979, Pete's Golf has been practicing the art of club fitting and has been selected as a top 100 club fitter by Golf Digest magazine. At Pete's Golf, we use the best technology available to create an exceptional fitting experience for every customer that walks into our store. Visit petesgolf.com or call 516-248-6891. That's 516-248-6891, and get your next set of clubs fit for you.
All right, welcome back to On Par with Anthony Scorsia, speaking with Jeff Babineau, senior writer at Golf Week. And Jeff, you had your cathartic article last night. I had my little talk with you this morning, so I think we're both feeling a little better. We can move on to some more positive things. Kind of a fun day yesterday in terms of scoring and the leaderboard really shaping up. You know, the obviously historical round with Robert Streb, Jason Day lighting it up, and that That fun little kid jumping around was a fun little story.
Great.
Henrik Stenson back in action. And then a couple of people who sort of like a Martin Keimer and a Jimmy Walker sort of maybe not in the same category, but certainly, you know, haven't been feeling it, so to speak, in quite some time. And Patrick Reed, we all know Patrick Reed in top five. So and his comments. So it's sort of a fun leaderboard when you look at it.
Pretty good. You know, I mean, we're on a trend of first-time winners, starting with Jason Day at Whistling Straits last year with that four in a row. So you have guys up there looking for their first. I mean, the top three guys on the board are all looking for their first major, Jimmy Walker, Robert Streb, and Emiliano Grillo. And then you have a mix behind them of some seasoning, you know. And you know, Robert Streb had missed the cut in all three majors prior to this year. Jimmy Walker's really been off the map. He's been, you know, he had that nice climb into his 30s, you know, where he kind of found it and won a bunch in a short stretch. And but this year he's been just off the map. So I think it's tough for those guys, especially now when the spotlight gets a little brighter and they're in that last group on Saturday, Sunday. It gets a little, the nerves get a little tighter and it's a little harder to freewheel out there. And you got to look for some of these guys behind him that are seasoned and just riding. And, you know, you think of the confidence that Henrik Stenson has right now. It's incredible. And Jason Day, the run he can go on. He putts so well. I mean, I can't imagine how poorly Rory McIlroy is putting, having to play with Jason Day, watching him roll in putts from all over the place. That'd be kind of tough. So it shapes up as a great weekend. And I kind of see the seasoned guys, even they might be a few shots behind, but I think they have an advantage heading into the weekend here.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with that. I think this might be – I know that Jimmy Walker has – his track record when, you know, Cher or holding the lead has been impeccable, really. But this is a different kind of animal. And like you said, it's been a while. And that's gonna factor in. You know, I'm not saying you can't do it, but when it's been a while and you haven't been there in the crucible, the heat of the moment there for, you know, something like a major championship in a while, and you have the quality of people, it's not just the quantity, but the quality of people chasing you, I think it's going to be a little difficult for Jimmy Walker and the Strebs and the Grillos to hold on to, you know, they might be holding on the reins a little too tight come Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, and it's tough. I mean, you look at a couple of those guys, Jimmy Walker is usually a good putter, but that's what's kind of been holding him back. He's been struggling with the putter. His driving can get a little errant too, but he does run some hot streaks. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if he ran the table here and became a fifth first-time winner. But those guys, when you're kind of not in great form, and, you know, Grillo, he's a nice player. I was there in Puerto Rico, and he missed a three-footer that would have won his first tour event in 15. He wanted a tour card so badly. He's a really nice player. He's worked his way into the top 40 in the world. But putting holds him back, too, at times. And all of a sudden on the weekend now, when it toughens up and you miss a few greens and you're scrambling and you're trying to make 8 footers for par, those are the ones you got to knock down. Those are the ones that Tiger Woods always knocked down when he's playing majors. And you look at a guy like Jason Day, who I think that's kind of an underrated part of his game. You see his power and how well he drives it and hits it. But he's just got such a great touch and such a great, you know, confidence with the putter. So that's going to be a big key this weekend. And Bolt Patrol will be a good test. You know, we could get rain this afternoon again, so it is going to be soft out there, not playing like they wanted it to play, I'm sure. But it's going to be all these guys can handle.
To me, one of the more interesting cases in the, at least through T9, is Martin Keimer because of his past success. And then he kind of, you know, went away for a while when he tried to change his swing. He wanted to hit that draw around the corner, you know, at Augusta, and his swing kind of lost his way. Well, what's your impressions of him? How do you like his chances on the weekend?
Well, if you look, I mean, he's been building nicely. You know, I remember talking to him back in Charlotte. And he kind of even talked about when he struggled a little bit with his game, he kind of enjoyed it. He's got a great disposition. I mean, I think attitude in the majors is so huge. If you look out there, I mean, Rory McIlroy yesterday looked like he wanted to punch somebody, and Sergio early on had shoulders down. He missed the cut here. And, And here's Martin Kaymer just kind of bouncing along, and he's just got a great disposition. You know, he really enjoys playing. He loves the big stage. He wants to get back to where he was, but he's not really forcing it. You know, he's just kind of taking his time, knowing that it's in there somewhere, and he's hoping to summon that. So if you look at him, he's been building nicely and kind of getting some results going into this. We're not seeing him on this side of the pond as much anymore because he gave up his tour card, but he's still a world-class player. He wants to make the Ryder Cup team. He's very excited about the Olympics. You know, you got these guys failing on the Olympics. This guy can't wait to get to the Olympics in March with all these athletes from Germany that he admires so much. So he's just got a great disposition and the right kind of disposition to do something this weekend.
As speaking of Olympics, just if we just jump on that for 1 second, I'm just curious to get your thoughts. Given the information that we're getting out of Rio now, given the conditions at the Olympic Village and some of the athletes, and I think Australia was one instance in which they wouldn't refuse to move their players in due to some the facilities weren't ready. And so not that we ever blame the players for not wanting to go. There's certainly more than cause for concern. But as we hear more and more coming out of Rio, your thoughts on the conditions over there and how that's played out in terms of how it relates to golf?
Yeah, I mean, I wrote a column on that earlier. I just thought the word I could only come up with is unfortunate. The whole deal is unfortunate. I think, you know, it's no secret that Rio's a mess. I was talking to someone this week who just returned from there, and, you know, the subway leading into the venues, the last two stops were just holes in the ground. So there's so much not complete there with some of the venues and Olympic Village, you know, as you said, guys were moving in. It was kind of a mess. And I don't blame a single player for not going, honestly. It just doesn't sound like a real stable situation. And I think early on, guys bought into the Olympic thing. And even though it wasn't going to be the biggest thing of their season, they were curious enough to want to go. I think McIlroy wanted to go, and Spieth and Dustin Johnson, all these guys talked about it. And in the end, there were just too many reasons that piled up. It made it easy to say, I'm not going to go. Mm-hmm. So I give, you know, kudos to the people who are excited about it. But I'm not heading down there. I have a lot of writer friends who are going who aren't, you know, they're more afraid than excited about it. And it's just unfortunate because golf's return to the Olympics was going to be a really good thing, a positive thing, and it kind of turned out not to be that way. I don't think it's anybody's fault. And I think it'll be a different story in Tokyo in 4 years.
Yeah, I was just going to ask. I imagine it's going to be 180 degrees different in Tokyo, but will that be enough to save it if it's worth being saved?
You know, who knows? I mean, I can't imagine the Olympic Committee is very thrilled with golf right now when you see 20-plus top male players not going. You know, the women are supporting it very well, and they're very excited about it. And I think arguably it could be, if Lexi Thompson were to win a gold medal, it might be the biggest thing she could do this year, which is tremendous. But it's I can't imagine the Olympic folks, you know, they look at that and all these other sports are there. You know, the divers are there, the track and field folks and all these others, and all of a sudden all these golfers that skipped out. And so when they reassess and see if golf is going to be there in the future, that's you wonder how favorably that's going to be looked upon.
Like you said, I think that's a good word, unfortunate. It's just and a shame that this is the way it's going to go down. And it's sort of, like you said, a confluence of different circumstances that have all sort of come together at once. And so very, very unfortunate. I want to move back to, because talking about unfortunate, Rory McIlroy's putting. I never seen him so deflated and sort of, like you said, shoulders slumped over and angry and deflated. I mean, he looked yesterday you know, after yesterday's round, like Phil looked after the first hole after pumping one out of bounds and making triple bogey. But there was a little sadness to Rory. What was it like to be around him in person?
It was tough, you know, because he was going to make the cut at two. It was interesting. He and Phil, had they both birdied, I think, could have moved the cut to one over. They both started the hole at two over, and then all of a sudden Rory's got a six iron in his hands, just hit a poor second shot, misses right into that rough where Phil got up and down to win the PGA in 05, and just a tentative little flip wedge from down there, makes bogey, he's gone all of a sudden, but he hit the ball so well, you know, his driving is such a weapon. There's only a few guys that they can really separate themselves with the driver. I mean, with the modern technology, there's a lot of great drivers of the golf ball, but there's still a handful of guys that separate themselves, and Rory's one. You know, I'd put Dustin Johnson in there and maybe Sergio and maybe a Jason Day. But so from where he was hitting tee shots, there's no way he should be home for the weekend. And he kind of felt that way at Oakmont, too, and he's just so tentative with the putter. It's, you know, defense from 4 feet. And it's tough. I mean, nothing will age you as a player more than your putting not being there, because it just puts so much stress on everything across the board, you know. I'm out there yesterday. I think Spieth hit two fairways on his first nine and made the turn in four under.
Right.
He was incredible. Yep. You know, he was making birdies out of bunkers and saving himself. And he didn't even putt great. I mean, probably the weakest part of his game yesterday was his putting. But still, he's the type of player that can go out there with a hot putter and save rounds and, you know, turn the 76s into 70s. And Rory's the other way. I mean, he's turning 70s into 75. And it's just awful with the putter. You know, Dave Stockton was here this week. I really don't know why he doesn't see Dave Stockton anymore, because I think he would be at a point with his putting. He'd like to hear some kind of voice again when he had success and get things going. But now he's got everybody analyzing it. He's asked about it all the time. He's asked about his grip, so it's definitely in his head, and that's a tough one to shake, you know. And he was really disappointed. You know, two top tens in the majors this year, two missed cuts, and that's not the kind of year he's looking for in the majors.
No, that was going to be one of my questions: is why he stopped seeing Dave Stockton. So thank you for covering that. It just seems strange that he would, and I you wonder, is this going to manifest itself into something else? Because it was clear. I mean, even Phil said it in his post-round press conference, where he said that it's amazing that how freely he swings the driver. It's beautiful. It's like it's just a beautiful sight to see, and how tight, I think he said, his trajectory was, and it's just it's just amazing. And then to watch him, his putting stroke, which is the complete opposite, where it's just completely tight, and, you know, it's getting to this point where it's paralysis by analysis, and will that manifest itself into something else? And so it's sort of an interesting phenomenon, what's going on with his putting.
And it really needs to fix it. It's tough. You know, you get in these situations, it's tough because you can get too much advice or maybe not enough advice.
Right.
I'm sure people are offering, but, you know, I mean, I think of putting, and it's such a mental thing. I think of Brad Faxon, who's such a great putter, and when he's on a green, he thinks of it sometimes like a game of horse, you know?
Sure.
25 feet. If you're out there playing a game of horse 25 feet, you're free and you're letting it fly. You're not thinking about two putting, or am I going to hit this thing 3 feet by, or all these things that we think about. At least I do on the first tee. I sit there with so many demons with a driver in my hand, I can't count them all.
Right.
So he's got to shake them, and it's kind of tough now. He's not going to the Olympics. I mean, maybe that's a good thing for him. He's going to take a couple weeks off. He's got the Ryder Cup ahead. I mean, that could help boost the season, I think, a little bit. He's got the FedEx Cup playoffs, but he needs something to kind of salvage the year. These guys, it's tough now to win majors. You know, it's tough to get in there. But he talked earlier in the week. Someone asked him, is it realistic to win a major a year? And he said it is realistic. If you're of his caliber, it is. And I think it is. But certainly, he's not going to do it putting the way he's been putting.
No. And unfortunately, Jeff, that's about all the time we have. It's Jeff Babineau, senior golf writer at Golf Week. golfweek.com and Golf Week Magazine. Jeff, thank you so much for joining me this this morning, and hopefully one of these days you and I will be able to tee it up.
I like that idea. I'm all for it.
All right.
For having me.
You're quite welcome, and thank you for being on. Appreciate you taking the time. I know you're busy.
You got it.
Take care. All right, that was Jeff Babineaux, senior writer at Golf Week. Great guy and a lot of fun to talk to and very insightful. That's all the time we have, folks, so make sure you we'll get to one more break. You got
Pete's
it. We'll drive.
Golf. Since 1979, Pete's Golf has been practicing the art of club fitting and has been selected as a top 100 club fitter by Golf Digest magazine. At Pete's Golf, we use the best technology available to create an exceptional fitting experience for every customer that walks into our store. Visit Pete'sGolf.com or call 516-248-6891. That's 516-248-6891 and get your next set of clubs fit for you.
All right, folks. All right. Make sure you go see your local golf professional, and don't be afraid to get your clubs fitted at Pete's Golf. You'll learn a lot about the golf swing and your golf game more than you probably imagined. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.